I want to start by just saying something that I said to you back at the beginning of December. Just a reminder, because there might be some people who weren't here and therefore wouldn't have heard what I said. I know the rest of you will, of course, have remembered perfectly. So I talked about Saint Irenaeus of Lyon, who lived around 125 to 202 CE. He wrote a book, he was an important Christian writing book called Against Heresies in around 180 CE. In his thinking, in his teaching, was the belief that the world was not made perfect. That human beings had been created imperfect, like children, to allow for growth and the development of our souls. And he believed that the ultimate aim for humanity is to reach a state of perfection through a relationship with God. For that to happen, humans need to be receptive and have humble hearts to allow themselves to be moulded by God. One of his quotes is that the glory of God is the human person fully alive. I mentioned too in that service a program called Human, which was a series of programs looking and tracing the beginnings of humanity. Evolution tells us, as we saw in that series, that there were many different groups of people who could have become the human beings of today. But there was one, which becomes us, which overall were the ones most able to adapt to their surroundings, to survive in the places that they were living and that they were moving into. So we are the ones who are the survival of the fittest. The implications in this is that we are not a fallen race. We are therefore people who don't as so much need saving, but as being helped, encouraged, inspired, lifted to live our lives as fully as possible in the ways which become the glory of God. The story that we heard in Genesis is quite different to that view, isn't it? The story and the implication in it, which have guided, shaped the ways of the world, not just Christianity, but certainly within Christianity and the way we look at the story of Jesus, have told or have caused untold damage. The way that the story has been taken as being women being the cause of all our troubles is a myth which is still believed by many around the world and used as a reason to basically not be nice to women, to abuse them, to abuse their position, their power, to abuse who they are, to give them no worth. But it is also shaped within this as one of what becomes the foundation stories of our faith, a means for people to be oppressed, for people to be held down, for people to be made to feel guilty, guilty in ways that only then the church or those high representatives of the church can help you with, can help you deal with. So every Friday, Saturday, you'll see people lining up outside Catholic churches or going into Catholic churches to receive their penance from the priests, the only ones who can show them or tell them of God's pardon. It becomes, for Christians, central because if we are fallen, then it means we need someone to save us from this fall. And so when Jesus has lived and has died, and they're trying to make sense of what this death means, well, here comes an easy way to make this part of this story of Jesus. The one who has come, as we sing in numerous songs, to save a fallen race. We get to the stage where people say you can't be forgiven unless you're forgiven through the blood of the cross, the Christ who dies. But that seems to go totally against what that psalmist sort of thought, who spoke of that forgiveness that was there centuries before Jesus lived. The psalmist who knew that God forgave. I remember many, many years ago when I was a teacher, a young girl who was part of the God Squad that we kind of ran at school lunchtime once a week. And even then, and so I'm talking back in the 80s, we were talking about climate change in ways that was threatening the world then. Look how little we've done since. But even then, she said one day, she said, well, I don't believe that this world will kind of finish that way because there are the means within the universe to heal itself. Probably what she forgot to remember was that there were also human beings within the universe who were sometimes hell-bent on making sure the opposite happened. But within the universe, she kind of instinctively saw there was this healing nature. Healing and wholeness comes from the same root of salvation. All of these things link in because the one or the source of all life, the source of all energy, the source of love, the source of all that exists, the very nature of that source is one that is healing, looking for wholeness. So Jesus comes, and he comes to lift us up. Like other prophets have before, and other prophets have since, a sense of lifting us up that we might become or take on more of that image which we believe is God's image. Love, showing care, concern, working for justice. Jesus comes as others have come, because we see in the world many, many times where we fail to acknowledge that in our lives in ways which are meaningful or full. As Paul says, so too often I do the things I don't want to do, and I don't do the things I want. We need to be lifted, inspired in ways which will help us to do that which we believe is right more and more. To stop doing those things we know are wrong more and more. So Jesus comes, and we have at the beginning of the story of his ministry, this story. A story which, again, if we take too literally, means that we miss some of its significance. Much there is in it that is helpful for us to think of the ways in which we need to live, the things we need to stop doing. But by putting in this character of the devil in this way, which is not quite Monty Python-esque, but could be seen with some of that way, the comedic kind of sense, it's become, and Lent has become, a time where we just want to avoid this devil, this Satan, to not upset God in those ways. So we saw Lent so much as a time to fast, which is not just about food. In fact, probably not majorly about food. For Isaiah, the prophet, reminds us that true fasting is not about wearing sackcloth and ashes, not about starving ourselves so we get angry with our neighbours and we quarrel with them and we treat our workers not well. Fasting, he says, is working for justice, caring for the widow, sacrificing our time, our energy in ways which bring good, not in making ourselves hypocritical by the way we look and the way we act as all religious, as holier than now, when actually we're no holier than any. Instead, we need to look at what these temptations were and to see if these temptations or that which is behind them are still there in this world, are still there in our lives today. And the answer is they are. And we see them both in personal ways, but also in more public ways too. So the first temptation that we read of is one that speaks of abusing resources. Surely, says the devil, turn these stones into bread. We'll do it that way round. Because if you do that, people will think how wonderful you are and they'll follow you. How often do we see that played in our political systems? How often do we hear the promises of politicians, elect us and we'll do this for you? Where they offer lower taxes or no increase. We'll offer this and that and the other. We'll make America great again. How often do we hear that appeal so that I, as the leader, or whoever that leader is, can become popular in ways which will mean they have a following and they can have their power and use it in whatever way they want. Even when that means the promises they have made are empty or not kept, or kept only for the few who are the rich, the wealthy, the people who think they have power and authority, who come together as this kind of club. Populism is not a way forward. How much do we see it with the politics that we see from Reform? The idea of, well, as long as we get rid of all these people who are not looking exactly like us, then we'll be great, everything will be fine. How shallow, how false, how wrong, and how abusive is that? Jesus refuses to go with it. Refuses to go with those ways and says, no, there are different ways. And as we learn from this life and from the words that we have recorded to him and his actions, we see how he works for justice, for peace, how he speaks up for truth and love. These are the ways. They might not always be popular ways, but they are the ways that are based on the ways of God's kingdom, where all are worthy, where all are included, where all are loved, where all should be fed, where all should have those necessities of life, that all can become rich and all can live lives fully, not stunted by anyone else. No, says Jesus, to populism. The second temptation can be seen of a way, or can be seen as a, in the way of abusing relationships. As the devil says to Jesus, well, jump off here, because God, yeah, will save you. Manipulate God. Abuse that relationship of son and father, as we see it in this story. Abuse it. Because if you abuse it, you'll always get what's right for you. You will be saved. His angels will cushion your fall. How often have we seen people who abuse relationships to get what they want at the cost of others? How the church has been full of these incidents of abuse, sexual abuse, financial abuse, and religious abuse that we see in many places. How do we see it when we think of things like the Epstein files and that whole shadowy area of who knew what and who kept what quiet for what reason and for what gain to themselves? The abuse of relationships that we see on that political level, where we see it also on that personal level. Ways where what I want dominates. And if there are victims, so what? So what? Those people aren't worth as much anyway, are they? Not as much as me. And Jesus again resists this. No, abuse of relationships is not there. For by doing that, the worth of each and every individual made with the image of God within them becomes sullied and dirtied in ways which are wrong. No, says Jesus. And in all his dealings throughout his ministry, we see how he treats people. We see how when a beggar, a blind beggar, sat on the side of the road and Jesus is walking past, shouts out, "Jesus, Jesus," and everyone says, "Shut up, he's not interested in you. He's got bigger things to do." And Jesus says, "Hold on, let me come to you." You might be seen as the lowest or the weakest or the unworthiest, but you're not. But you're not. The woman caught in adultery, the woman who was hemorrhaging, who reaches out to touch, and he turns to see who she is because he wants to give her back her dignity, her place within society, which had been torn from her because of her hemorrhaging. He sees the worth of every person, and he calls us to do the same. And then in the third temptation, we see the abuse of power. We've already mentioned power that we see. But we can take it even further. For maybe here's a country that has the resources that I'd like for my country. Here's a place we can plunder and rape and take their resources to make them useful for ourselves. I remember when I was taking a wedding a few years ago for a couple who were Nigerian. And I went to the house of the girl the night before the formal wedding part was taking place, to be part of their Nigerian celebration. And I have never seen as much alcohol as I have saw, you know, in that house that night. But that was one thing. For every guest who came brought gifts, mostly alcohol. But partway through it, the father of the bride made three toasts. The third toast was the drinking of gin, and it was a remembrance of the way that English colonists had stripped that country of its wealth and resources and put it in a place from which it is still trying to recover. An abuse of power. Take what we can, because we are the powerful. We see it in sexual scandals, we see it in financial matters, we see it again and again, both at personal level, but also at this political and international level. And Jesus says, no. No. That is not the way. It is when the weak are held, when the weak have a voice, then there is strength. When the powerful, those who can make decisions, listen to the voices of the oppressed and act on their behalf, then society is made better. Use our power, use it with humility, use it for the good of others. And one commentator talks about how in all of this, there is a fourth temptation. We only have three named, but he says there's a fourth. And the fourth, he says, is the temptation to retreat. The temptation to walk away from all of this, to close our eyes and our ears in ways that we do not see what's going on in the world. We do not see what's going on around us. We close ourselves in. We retreat into ourselves. As long as I have food for the morrow, as long as I'm okay, I don't need to do anything. But that's not the way. That's not the way at all. And Jesus comes, and time again, we see when he's been away in prayer in the hillside, or when he's been on a mountaintop with two of his disciples, we see it from here, when he's been in this wilderness, he comes back and he ministers to the people who are there. He talks with them, he touches them, he helps them, he lifts them. The call is to serve our world, not to retreat from it. Retreats are for gathering strength, our time of worship together, a time to gain strength and inspiration that we might be in the world, serving the world, caring for one another, working for justice, working for those who are the poorest, those who have the least rights, those who are downtrodden. That is our calling. Don't give in to the temptation to retreat, is the model that Jesus shows us. Do what you can, says John Wesley. Wherever you can, to whomever you can, as long as ever you can. That's no retreat. And when we work through these temptations and look at our lives, then it is that the wilderness and this story can become a place of hope, because it guides us, it strengthens, it inspires us to live the lives we are called to live. To live the lives that show that way, those ways of God's. We live those lives which become fully alive and show the glory of God. So right from the beginning, we've always had choice. The choice of good or evil, as it's put in that story in Genesis. Right from the beginning, there's been temptation. When we say the Lord's Prayer, lead us not into temptation, we're not led. It's already there and always has been and always will be. But what Jesus gives us is a model for us. A model for us to resist temptation, which leads us to doing evil. He gives us a model for us choosing between good and evil. He shows us how to live in this world, how to build God's kingdom here on earth. So may we follow that example. May our experiences and our wilderness times strengthen us for our living day by day. Amen. And so we're going to sing our next hymn, You Call Us to the Wilderness.